But the tunnels were more intricate and complicated than Ryan had guessed. Over the years, the basements of most of the buildings in that part of Chicago had been tunneled and joined, cellars tying in with main drains and sewers. The larger blocks had once had as many as a dozen floors below the earth, linked by stairs and ramps. Ryan glanced at his wrist chron, unable to believe that they'd only been trudging through the low-roofed passages for an hour and a half. Despite having the compass, it wasn't possible to set a course and hold it. The pipes and ancient electrical conduits all combined to form a weaving pattern of magnetic interference, making the tiny needle spin like a jolt-head dervish. Every place seemed the same, with piping and wires running near the rounded ceilings, with only the occasional torch to show them any light. It was like being in a scaled-down version of some of the older redoubts, but infinitely more confusing.
We're lost.
Before you get lost, you have to know where you were.
Lori and Frankie had been sent down to the sub-basement where Christy was held prisoner after the threat of Outlanders running loose throughout the Midnight's undergroundville. They both squatted on the floor on either side of the door, in the deep shadow. Lori's pocked face showed a mixture of superstitious awe and anger. She was playing with the derringers in her belt, taking them out one at a time, cocking them and pointing them toward Christy, but not directly at her. Neither of them spoke. It was obvious to Christy that things had gone wrong. If Ryan and the others had been captured, then the Mutie women would have been unable to conceal their delighted gloating. Nobody heard feet outside in the main corridor, but the door was suddenly shoved open, and Dean Carter jumped into the room.
Hi, Christy!
The boy grinned, then saw the movement behind him. His smile disappeared.
Oh, shit!
Hi, Dean. Welcome to the Pleasure Dome.
By the reckoning of the local people, it was around 10 in the morning. The early sun had vanished to be replaced by a cover of purple-gray clouds. Over to the east, hanging across the sullen expanse of the old lake, was a belt of heavy rain, its edges dark against the lighter gray of the rest of the sky. The air tasted colder and bitter, like setting your tongue to the frosted blade of a sword. The water was close ahead of Doc and Michael, salt bitter in the nostrils, its surface rippled by white-topped wavelets.
White horses. Ride a white horse. A white swan. Wild horses. Wild duck. Wild cherry.
Doc looked sideways at the younger man.
Cherry, hear that?
Sure, Doc, and I bet anything that it's hung with snow. Oh, creeping, weeping Mother Mary, can't you snap out of it?
Out of what, old friend? Snap. Crackle, pop, wheeze and whir, rattle and hum.
Michael shook his head sorrowfully. His shoulders drooped, and he shuffled his bare feet in the dirt of the street.
Like Brother Frederick used to say, your elevator doesn't go all the way to the top floor, does it?
But the old-timer wasn't listening, leaning on his sword stick to take the weight off his sprained ankle.
Another hour, Emily, my queen of all hearts, and we shall reach the redoubt. After that, it will be all haste toward the chronological transfer unit. A little while to prepare the consoles, and then it will be farewell forever to this dank and dangerous future world.
But I came to help.
Now Dean found himself lying chained next to Christy.
Hush. Keep your voice quiet, Dean. Lie still and rest a little.
We fucked up. I fucked up worst.
It had been easy for the two Mutie guards to take the boy. Lori had clubbed him to the dirt, using the butt of one of her range of small pistols. The blow had been hard enough to knock him out for a good half minute. Dean came to, flat on his back, with the heel of one of Frankie's boots crushing his windpipe, pinning him in the dirt, nearly strangling him, while the other woman snapped the brass lock onto a chain around his ankle. He was as helpless as Christy, on the opposite side of the cellar. Now the members of the Midnights had gone out and left them alone in the basement.
That fat bitch mean what she said?
Probably trying to scare you, Dean. Just cheap Mutie talk.
They both knew that that was a lie, and that the Midnights would be back with their leader, Billy. Frankie had done the talking, uttered the threats that sounded convincingly like promises, laughing down at the boy with his big Browning high power stuck into her belt.
Red Lady here is going to be our chosen one. Lead us from this dark life to the lands of the West. And you, little male kind, will be the sacrifice to seal our bond.
She'd been explicit on what they would do to the boy's naked body, with sharp knives and with needles, with heat and with liquids. Fire and water, blood, steel scraping along the marrow of living bone, white iron probing at the back of an eye socket. The parts of Dean's body that would be removed in front of all the tribe by cutting and tearing.
And after it, you shall have the fucking honor of being a dish fit for a queen, sonny.
Fuck that!
Now Christy and Dean were once more on their own, and time was racing by. Ryan had found two different exits from the complex, but each was heavily guarded and barred. The handful of muty women wouldn't have been an insoluble problem, but the steel doors were likely to be solidly locked. With every heartbeat, he knew that the situation was slipping away from him. For the first time in years, Ryan found himself doubting his own ability to lead. From their first night in the abandoned house in the suburbs of Old Chicago, things had begun to go sorely wrong. Abe's departure, then Doc running off, taking their newest recruit with him. Then Christy being lifted by muties almost under his nose and whisked away into their stinking underground lair. The last cut was the deepest of all. To lose his only child in the raven heart of that same Stygian maze. Now he couldn't even get JB and Mildred, last of the band, out of the midnight stand into the clean air.
Fire blast!
There must be some other routes out of here. Why not look for small side passages? Then there could be a way into the streets.
God damn it!
The iron drain cover hadn't been moved for 100 years. It had rusted solidly into the metal ring that surrounded it and resisted all of Ryan and JB's efforts to shift it. They were balanced on a crumbling ladder, and it was difficult to put any real pressure on the cover. There was a pattern of tiny holes drilled through the center, and Ryan was able to see chinks of daylight through them. He realized that he was becoming seriously disoriented, wandering through the dangerous corridors, expecting to be attacked at any moment. He was losing track of the passage of time.
Fuck!
He punched at the manhole cover with the flat of his hand, jarring his wrist. A great cloud of rust flakes fell into his face, drifting over JB and Mildred.
Feel better now, Ryan?
Of course not, Mildred.
Wait. Do that again, around the edges.
You crazy? I hurt my damned hand.
Use the butt of this tire. Short, hard, repeated blows. Could loosen it.
Ryan tried it.
All this is gonna do is draw the muties.
Just keep it up, Ryan.
Mildred and JB went back down the ladder to where the drain opened into a wider tunnel. Both crouched with blasters drawn, watching for a patrol. The rifle was awkward to handle on the cramping ladder, but Ryan persisted. The longer he tried, the greater the risk of their being trapped by the nocturnal wind. The cover suddenly shifted an inch.
Yes!
Someone's coming. I can hear boots on the stone.
It's moving!
Coming fast!
Get out in the daylight. We got an advantage over those blind sluts.
Ryan set his shoulders against the center of the iron circle and pressed with all his strength. It crossed his mind to wish that Christy was there with her fearsome reserves of power from the Earth Mother. Though Ryan also knew from experience what a dreadful toll was taken from his beloved by using that secret power. The disc lifted in a flurry of rust, rolling out into the sunlit street above him.
Go!
Right!
Ryan was out in a moment, his eye raking the street for signs of danger. There were the usual piles of blackened rubble and a surprised muty rat only a dozen yards away. It twitched its long whiskers and loped casually off into the distance. Mildred was on Ryan's heels, following him at a crouch to take shelter behind the rotting hulk of a burned-out transit authority bus, JB only seconds behind them. They watched the shadowed circle, but nobody emerged from it for a full minute. Ryan had the crosshairs of the laser sight pinned to the open manhole, his finger light on the trigger, butt set solidly to his right shoulder. Finally, a head appeared, a long, narrow face, with something glistening in the nose like a jeweled stud. Ryan didn't hesitate. The Midnights knew that they were there, had tracked them through the tunnels and were still on their trail. Silence would gain them nothing. He squeezed the trigger.
Jesus.
The big 7.62mm full metal jacket round hit the woman through the center of the forehead. The impact knocked off the dark glasses, sending them tumbling into the road. Horrifically, the bullet angled downward behind the eyes,